This is Free Speech Radio News for Wednesday, the 20th of September, 2006. From KPFK in LA, I'm Aura Bogado. Republicans on Capitol Hill are attempting to block Bush's authority over domestic surveillance. Disability rights advocates sue the California Department of Transportation for violating civil rights.
I've actually tipped my chair over backwards on some of the curb cuts that were too steep.
Sidewalks are the linchpin to societal integration for people with disabilities. It's the most basic public service provided by a government entity, and yet people with disabilities are unable to use the sidewalks throughout California.
And the fallout after Thailand's first coup in 15 years. All that and more on today's newscast, but first, these headlines.
I'm Shannon Young with the Free Speech Radio News headlines. Violent demonstrations calling for the Hungarian Prime Minister's resignation have continued for the second day in a row in Budapest. Over 200 people have been injured in the street clashes, and more than 130 have been arrested. Police used water cannons to disperse protesters assembled today. A leaked tape in which the Prime Minister admits to lying repeatedly about the economy in order to win last April's election has fueled calls for his resignation. His economic reforms since then have also made him unpopular. Prime Minister Ferenc Gyurcsány still refuses to step down. Public transportation in Bangladesh was largely suspended today as protesters demanding electoral reforms blockaded rail and vehicle traffic. Opposition activists are calling for the removal of the country's top electoral officials, saying they favor the current government. Tens of thousands of protesters flooded the capital city of Dhaka on Monday. Elections in Bangladesh are scheduled for January of next year. Britain's independent scientific academy, the Royal Society, has publicly asked ExxonMobil to stop funding groups that deny scientific evidence on climate change. Naomi Fowler reports from London.
The Royal Society has never spoken out in this way before. It says last year ExxonMobil gave nearly $3 million to 39 groups that misrepresent and undermine the science of climate change. These groups have claimed that it's very difficult to blame climate change on human activity, and that global temperature rises are not related to rising carbon dioxide levels in the atmosphere. But the Royal Society says evidence to the contrary is overwhelming. In a letter to ExxonMobil, the Society has demanded that the oil company stop funding these groups and stop making inaccurate and misleading public statements on global warming. They're also asking for a list of all the other organisations or groups funded by ExxonMobil. ExxonMobil is standing by its reports and its environmental views. This is Naomi Fowler in London for Free Speech Radio News.
The state of California has filed a lawsuit against six car manufacturers over damages caused by greenhouse gas emissions created by their products. Named in the suit filed today in the U.S. District Court in San Francisco are Ford, General Motors, Nissan, Honda, Chrysler, and Toyota. A federal judge in Idaho has allowed a wrongful arrest lawsuit against the Department of Homeland Security and Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez to move forward. Lee Robartis has more.
Former University of Idaho student Abdullah Al-Kid was held in jail for 2 weeks and prohibited from going to Saudi Arabia on a four-year scholarship to study Islam after he was detained at Dallas International Airport in Washington, D.C. in 2003. At the time, authorities said Al-Kid was a material witness in the trial of fellow Idaho student Sami Al-Hussein, a Saudi who was accused of fostering terrorism due to his work on Islamic charity websites. A Boise jury acquitted Al-Hussein, who was subsequently deported. The prosecution did not call on Al-Kid to testify. Federal Judge Edward Lodge Tuesday denied a government motion to drop the lawsuit on the grounds agents conducted the arrest and detention properly. Al-Kid's attorneys say that his detention cost him the scholarship and job opportunity. They accused the FBI of telling a detention hearing judge he had a one-way ticket to Saudi Arabia when he actually had a round-trip ticket. They also say the FBI failed to tell the judge he had a wife and family in the U.S., he's a U.S. citizen, and that he had cooperated with FBI interviews in the case. Lee Robartis, Free Speech Radio News, Moscow, Idaho.
A federal court in Argentina has sentenced a former police chief to life in prison for crimes against humanity and for the murder and torture of political dissidents during the 1976 to 1983 dictatorship. Marie Trigona reports from Buenos Aires.
Retired Police Chief Miguel Echecolas, now 77, ran clandestine detention centers in the Buenos Aires province during the military dictatorship. He is the first military officer to be sentenced for crimes against humanity and sentenced to life. In the courtroom last night, Echecolas kissed a crucifix after the sentence was read. Several spectators threw red paint on him as he was escorted out of the courtroom. Human rights activists and relatives of the disappeared celebrated the verdict while embracing each other inside and outside the courtroom in La Plata, 40 kilometers from Buenos Aires. This is the second sentence of a former military officer charged with human rights abuses after Argentina's Supreme Court struck down his unconstitutional legal immunity for officers who served during the era of military dictatorship. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Marie Trigona in Buenos Aires.
And I'm Shannon Young for Free Speech Radio News.
Trouble continues in Thailand one day after the country's military seized power from Prime Minister Thaksin Shinawatra. Although massive protests menaced his authority this year, Thaksin was the clear winner in April's general election. Nevertheless, Army Chief General Sondip Bunyadkhalin led yesterday's coup d'etat and is holding power. In a televised address, Sondip said the army would return power to the people as quick as possible. Sondi added that a new constitution will be written and democracy should be restored in 1 year. Kansharika Vanji is the opposition party's deputy secretary. He says the coup was bound to happen.
Really, I put the blame fully on Thaksin and on Thai Rak Thai for the way they've undermined the democratic system here in Thailand, for the corruption, for the abuse of human rights. It's a bit late for him to do anything. I think the ball was in his court for all this time, and it's very sad that he's left it so late and has brought Thailand back to this situation.
This is Thailand's 17th coup since democracy was installed in 1932. 46 of the past 73 years have been under military rule. The international community has begun to respond to the coup. The Bush administration has already voiced disappointment and wants to see a swift return to civilian control. Australian Prime Minister John Howard voiced similar concern.
I would want, and Australia would want, Thailand to return to democracy. It is a country that's been free of these things now for a decade and a half.
Thailand's now deposed Prime Minister Thaksin left the United Nations General Assembly in New York early yesterday and traveled to London. Britain indicated it is not seeking to restore Thaksin's position. Early elections in Thailand are planned for October. Republican attempts to block the president's authority over domestic surveillance in the House of Representatives are failing. But those attempts are slowing down progress on Bush's tough on security agenda. Washington editor Leanne Caldwell reports.
The Republican Congress and the administration would like to pass several security bills before Congress adjourns next week. But roadblocks from within their own party are slowing down the progress. One Republican lawmaker has been working to disrupt domestic surveillance legislation from moving forward. Because of concerns by Arizona Republican Jeff Flake, the House Judiciary Committee took the bill off last week's agenda. According to the Hill newspaper, Flake wrote a letter to fellow Republicans that said the legislation in question jeopardizes civil liberties and is a risky expansion of presidential authority. Representative Flake explains in more detail.
I have concerns about 2 years from now, what will happen if this program is outside of the FISA process? The new president might not feel it's necessary, and we'll have a gap in necessary gathering of intelligence.
Flake proposes that domestic surveillance be brought under the jurisdiction of the courts of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. Currently, U.S. law says wiretapping of Americans is allowed under the FISA courts program. But the president says his inherent power allows him to bypass those courts and surveil without a warrant. The main Republican bill, authored by Republican Heather Wilson from New Mexico, would greatly expand the domestic surveillance program from terrorist suspicion to a more lenient litmus test. It would allow the president to direct intelligence agencies, including the National Security Agency, to collect emails and record telephone conversations whenever there is an imminent threat of terrorism. The president determines the level of imminent threat. The House Intelligence Committee voted along party lines to advance the legislation. Civil liberties groups call it evasive. Brittany Benowitz, staff attorney at the Center for National Security Studies.
Would permit mass consumption of communications into and out of the United States without suspicion of any kind. So, for example, they could listen to every single call from Dearborn, Michigan to Pakistan. And we actually have reason to think that that's what they might want to do under this bill, because they've told us that they are collecting not the contents of communications but call records in certain geographic areas of interest. So I think it's important to note that this sort of wholesale massive surveillance, this turning of the NSA vacuum cleaner on Americans in the United States, is, among other things, about profiling.
Representative Flake and a few other GOP will be joined by Democrats who oppose the bill. But it's unclear at this time if they'll even get to offer their alternate proposal. It's expected to pass along party lines. Now over to the Senate, where three different pieces of legislation will be taken up by that Intelligence Committee later this week. That means the earliest they can be debated before the full Senate is next week, cutting it close to adjournment. Both the Senate and the House also wanted to pass legislation on the trial of detainees and guidelines for their interrogators. But negotiations between Senate GOP and the White House over interrogation standards have disrupted any sort of swift action. And negotiations seem to be moving slowly. Lead negotiator, Republican Senator John McCain from Arizona, is optimistic but tight-lipped.
Really, we are, I think, continuing to have good communications, and I still think we're making progress. But I can't say anything more than that because it switches from hour to hour. And for the second and last time, I apologize to you for not being more specific. I always am in the past, but this process, I can't tell you exactly the difference in the positions because they change all the time as we go back and forth.
As for the House of Representatives, it's likely they'll take up a version of the detainee trial bill that's similar to the administration's. Efforts to reinstate habeas corpus and insert stricter standards for humane treatment were rejected. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Leanne Caldwell.
Less than 2 months before midterm elections, the House of Representatives was poised at deadline today to pass legislation that would require voters to show proof of citizenship at voting booths in the future. The Republican proposal comes just a day after a judge in Georgia threw out a similar law passed by the state legislature there because it would disenfranchise qualified voters. FSRN's Darby Hickey reports on the federal bill from the Capitol.
Only 2 weeks are left before Congress breaks until after the November elections, and Democrats criticize the GOP for focusing on what they called a solution in search of a problem. But voter fraud is a pervasive issue not adequately addressed by current laws, said Republicans, and their proposal is not only crucial but might actually help increase voter participation. Michigan Republican Candace Miller oversaw elections when she was Secretary of State prior to her election to Congress.
This legislation actually builds on the Real ID Act, which ensures that no states issue either driver's licenses or state identification cards to illegal aliens, and it assures the validity of the documents which establish the identity and citizenship of the individuals. This legislation will be yet another safeguard to ensure that those who are in our country illegally or who are not citizens do not participate in our electoral process.
Voting by non-citizen immigrants was invoked by many Republicans as a reason to require IDs at the polls through the bill, the Federal Election Integrity Act. The proposal would mandate that voters must prove their citizenship at the polls on voting day, as well as when registering to vote. It also requires states to provide IDs for free to those who are unable to pay, which the federal government would reimburse. Members of the Congressional Black, Hispanic, and Asian Pacific American caucuses said that the bill would discourage qualified citizens from voting, even in the upcoming elections before the law would be implemented, and particularly make voting more difficult for people of color, the elderly, the poor, and people in rural areas. Linda Sanchez, a Democrat from Southern California, said the act is an election time ploy to distract voters from real issues and refocus anger at undocumented immigrants.
Think about how many people would be left out of the voting booth if this bill is implemented nationwide. Besides the bureaucratic red tape that this bill would create, there's also the cost. It can cost several hundred dollars to renew a passport or to retrieve an original birth certificate. That cost, which is in fact akin to a poll tax, is a cost that many people can't afford. This violates the due process and equal protection clauses of the 14th Amendment, as well as the Voting Rights Act.
Sanchez and others added that the bill does nothing to address the problems in voting that have plagued recent elections, including primaries over the past weeks, where electronic voting machines caused confusion and delays in the electoral process. Ironically, even Republican representatives asked how the bill would affect voters who won't have their pictures taken because of their religious beliefs, such as the Amish, or in a state like Oregon where all voting is done by mail. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Darby Hickey in Washington, D.C.
While consensus is a rare product in Congress, no one on Capitol Hill contests the need to move towards energy independence. As FSRN's Yanmei Shea finds out, the differences are in how to achieve it.
Standing in front of a shiny silver Ford Escape this week, Republican Senator of Utah, Robert Bennett, boasted to reporters his prize. The brawny SUV, he says, feeds on hybrid fuel.
Of the three Escapes, the 4, the 6, and the hybrid has the best performance. So I thought, okay, I'm getting power without guilt.
Bennett stood shoulder to shoulder with Ron Wyden, Democratic Senator of Oregon. The duo introduced their proposal that would provide tax credits to buyers of fuel-efficient vehicles.
If any of you want to come look at the car, it's not for sale unless you make me a really, really good offer.
There's the real free market. Softball questions for me, difficult ones for Senator Bennett.
According to New Mexico Senator Jeff Bingaman, the highest-ranking Democrat on the Energy Committee, more of such heartwarming bipartisanship is on the way.
To promote alternative fuel has been supported by people from both parties, and in the future I would think that would continue to be the case.
Congress members have introduced several dozen proposals to promote either alternative energy or fuel-efficient vehicles. Most Senate bills boast of sponsors from both parties. But this is a campaign season when things are less friendly. The Republican National Committee has a gas price calculator on their website. It shows Democrats plan to increase gas taxes, support the Kyoto Treaty, and, as a result, would pump up the gas price to nearly $4 per gallon. North Dakota Senator Byron Dorgan, Democratic member of the Energy Committee, says Democrats believe in conservation, unlike Republicans.
The president and the vice president and the majority party that controls the Congress is by and large pretty interested in saying our future is in digging and drilling. Well, you know something, we have to dig and drill. But if digging and drilling is our only energy policy, I call that yesterday forever. It doesn't work.
Many Republicans are unabashed about digging and drilling, such as Missouri Senator Jim Talent, who also serves on the Energy Committee.
Yeah, I'm strongly in support of exploring for oil in the Arctic and in the Gulf.
Most Democrats starkly oppose to drilling in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge in Alaska. But many of them voted in July for a bill to open up a huge area in the Gulf of Mexico for offshore drilling.
8.3 million new acres that we've been able to negotiate because of the good work of others from the Gulf Coast states will provide 6 times the amount of natural gas that this country imports every year.
That's Mary Landrieu, Democratic Senator of Louisiana. Her state could receive hundreds of millions of dollars over the next decade through sharing a chunk of taxes turned in by oil and natural gas companies if the bill becomes law. Right now, Louisiana only receives a meager portion of the tax revenue. Knowing lawmakers hold the key to their fortune, energy industry pours money into political campaigns. In general, they find Republicans better investments. Alex Knott, political editor of the Center for Public Integrity.
Energy companies, on the whole, give marginally more money to Republicans than they do to Democrats. Looking at all the donations leading up to 2004, Republicans received 73% of the money, whereas Democrats received 24% of the money. The rest went to independent candidates.
Democrats sees an opening in these numbers.
Washington,
Big Oil gives millions to politicians and gets billions in tax breaks. Charles Taylor fills up his campaigns with over $110,000 from Big Oil and Gas.
A Washington love affair.
Congressman Chakola, thanks for the $2 billion in tax breaks. Love Big Oil.
The Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee is responsible for the content of this advertising.
In this campaign cycle, oil and gas companies have donated nearly $5 million to political candidates. 83% of the money went to support Republicans, and the rest to Democrats. For Free Speech Radio News, Ye Meixie in Washington, D.C.
The annual meeting of the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund is underway in Singapore. In his speech at the opening session, World Bank President Paul Wolfowitz said that in the past year, the bank had provided $9.5 billion in support for the poor, adding that more than half of that sum was dedicated to Africa. But World Bank critics in African countries like Nigeria disagree and point out that the bank's activities have increased poverty on the continent. FSRN Sama Lokoya reports from Lagos.
In his address at the meetings, the World Bank president restated the commitment of the bank to help the world's poor.
From Mexico to Mongolia to Malawi, there are millions of poor people who, when given the chance, will work hard to escape poverty. It's not their performance that holds them back, but the conditions around them, from bureaucratic red tape to potholed roads to protected markets. Our mission is to help pave the way so that they can take control of their own destiny.
But poverty still remains a grim reality in Africa, despite the close to $5 billion the World Bank said it committed to the continent in the last year. In Nigeria's Niger Delta region, where Western oil companies are extracting billions of dollars worth of crude oil yearly, local people are desperately trying to survive. Edward Onofe says poverty is driving them to scoop fuel from leaking oil pipelines, a practice that has cost more than 2,000 lives through fire outbreaks in recent years.
Poverty is still responsible. I want to say this. Poverty is still responsible for all these things. We produce this oil. And look at the situation. Look at Niger Delta that produces oil. We have nothing to write home about. We have no single road in Okpe. And we are oil producing area. The people are very poor. They have nothing to eat.
Bode Olufemi of the Environmental Rights Action, Nigeria's affiliate of the International Environmental Group, Friends of the Earth, says some World Bank programs are increasing poverty rather than reducing it in places like the Niger Delta, where multinational companies are doing business.
Consistently, the World Bank claim that they are trying to eradicate poverty in Africa. But on the contrary, they've been supporting programs and projects that does not support local livelihoods. You know, they've been supporting programs that eradicate local survival. They've been supporting programs that impact on the environment.
One such World Bank-supported programs is the West African Gas Pipeline Project, which is meant to convey natural gas from the oil fields of the Niger Delta to other West African countries for power generation. The environmental group says environmental pollution that will result from the project is likely to affect farmlands and fishing grounds, which local people rely on for their livelihood. For Free Speech Radio News, this is Sam Olukoya in Lagos.
For archives of this or any other newscast or documentary, you can visit our website at fsrn.org. You can also email us at comments@fsrn.org. That's comments@fsrn.org. The group Disability Rights Advocates has filed a class action lawsuit against the California Department of Transportation, charging it with violating federal and state civil rights laws requiring accessible sidewalks and streets for people with disabilities. It's the first suit of its kind in the United States. The Berkeley-based nonprofit law firm has filed suit on behalf of all Californians with disabilities, but the main plaintiffs are the group Californians for Disability Rights, along with several individuals. David Mundell reports from Berkeley.
Many of the state's highways under the jurisdiction of the California Department of Transportation, Caltrans, are pedestrian rights of way, such as city streets and park and ride facilities. The first suit of its kind in the U.S., challenging violations statewide, charges Caltrans has done nothing to make these areas accessible to and safe for people with mobility and vision disabilities. Long Beach resident Ben Rockwell, one of the plaintiffs, uses a wheelchair. He describes how difficult it is for him to travel along the Pacific Coast Highway.
I've actually tipped my chair over backwards on some of the curb cuts that were too steep. I've also had the problems of going down what I call a funnel curb cut that starts out not too steep, but it gets steeper and steeper as it goes down to the point where you're thrown out into the middle of the intersection.
People with disabilities bristle at what they say are Caltrans' many violations of state and federal laws. According to Disability Rights Advocates attorney Mary Lee Kimber, some of the most blatant ones include inaccessible paths of travel, missing and inadequate curb ramps, dangerous slopes, crumbled or uneven pavement, and lack of detectable warnings to indicate to blind people when the sidewalk ends.
Caltrans has not identified barriers, nor has it created a schedule to fix these barriers. Construction is even a further problem for persons with mobility disabilities or vision disabilities because Caltrans does not provide accessible alternative routes, nor does it provide information in accessible form for persons with vision impairments.
According to Kimber, Caltrans has been unwilling to provide sufficient information about the number and location of its various properties throughout the state. Californians for Disability Rights member John Lonberg, who is a paraplegic, says Caltrans is the only state agency not to have an outside oversight mechanism to make sure it meets the requirements of the law.
It is the only agency of the state that has successfully fought and gained last year through the legislature the right to enforce and police their own violations.
Safe sidewalks and streets are essential for everyone, especially for people with disabilities. That's how DRA attorney Alexis Markwalder sums up why this lawsuit is so important.
Sidewalks are the linchpin to societal integration for people with disabilities. It's the most basic public service provided by a government entity, and yet people with disabilities are unable to use the sidewalks throughout California.
Free Speech Radio News was unable to reach Caltrans for comment. DRA Executive Director Lawrence Paradis says although Caltrans could be liable for damages, given its violation of the civil rights of people with disabilities, the plaintiffs are seeking only injunctive relief. I'm David Mandel, Free Speech Radio News, Berkeley.
Free Speech Radio News is an independent, listener-supported newscast produced by Simba Russo and Monica Lopez. Our Washington editor is Leanne Caldwell. Shannon Young is our headlines editor. Our technical production team at KPFA in Berkeley includes Eric Klein and Antonio Ortiz. You can listen to this newscast in its entirety at fsrn.org. We also welcome your comments, questions, and story ideas. Just email us at comments@fsrn.org. From KPFK in LA, I'm Aura Bogado.